Farmageddon part
17?
What now?
20, yeah, 20,000?
20, yeah, comfortably.
Yeah.
Phoenix City!
Welcome to Phoenix City for another week. Did I have last week off? I can't remember anymore.
You did have last week off.
There we go, cool.
You had quite a few weeks off.
I was going to say, has it been two?
Nah, sure. I was back for the raw game after that, so one week off.
So it's one in the last five.
Yeah. Well, no, that's not fair. Two in the last...
six.
I'm back. I'm back anyway, joined by Dave and Cam tonight.
Hello, folks.
Frosty is away, so we will... Well, that's probably a good thing for him, right?
Well, to be fair, he's away because his missus got stuck in the US on that plane that got hit on the tarmac.
Oh, what?
Yeah, so she's got back late because plane got damaged.
She wasn't on the plane.
No, they weren't on the plane.
The
they
flight
were
was
cancelled
because another plane hit an Air New Zealand plane on the tarmac.
Oh, that's not good.
Ripped off its horizontal stabiliser.
Yeah. So not so good.
An indicator how busy I've been is that I haven't even heard about the story at all.
It feels good that they cancelled that flight when that's happened.
Yeah, and just see the photos of the damage was quite bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so Frosty's away. Here we go, that's why. because planes are hitting each other in the US. Let's talk about football. Does anybody want to talk about the Phoenix on the table?
I'm quite comfortable saying I don't because I haven't seen the game or the highlights.
I don't think you missed much, to be honest. We were not good.
Yeah, I watched the game. You and I were at Four Kings, Dave.
We were.
It was a game that I kind of tuned out of. Yep. Many times during this because there was just nothing going on. And to be honest, nothing going on really from either team. It was a shit game in football for the neutrals, even shitter when it's your football team that's doing absolutely nothing and got outplayed by a team that was also doing very little.
I mean, they were doing a bit, but it wasn't good football.
No.
They were holding possession nicely, they were passing it around, and we were not stopping them.
It seems counterintuitive.
But it wasn't like they were, you know, it wasn't great passing. It wasn't like they were really cutting up a good team. It was just us kind of hanging back and watching them a little bit. And when we did get the ball and go forward, we didn't do anything with it. I mean, we had one shot on target the whole game.
Jesus.
That's appallingly bad.
Yeah.
Two of our shots were in the box. We had, I think I have that back. It was three in the box, two from outside, and of our five total shots, two of them were blocked. So, you know, it's not good stuff we're creating up front.
Yeah. And to jump to Mark Redden's comments after the game where he said that we got outdone by two magnificent strikes by two marquee players. Sure, we did, but they didn't create anything else. Like, there were so few other opportunities in that game that we got beaten by a team that was a bit rubbish and beaten comfortably. It was a comfortable win for the City. They didn't have to do anything because they were winning.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the goals were quite good. I'm not going to fault that, but I think he was trying to imply that it took really good quality stuff to undo us. I don't think that's true. I think the first goal happened quite early in the game. They were up. They were comfortable. They were under no pressure. They didn't need to press hard for a goal or anything. It was pretty comfortable for them, and they took advantage of that. I think they would have liked to have created more, maybe, but they didn't need to. And so there was no point putting themselves under pressure when they just didn't need to.
And it's like the Jets game in round one for us. We were up 2-0 for periods of that. We didn't need to do anything. Like, we were even 1-0 for most of that game. We were comfortable, didn't need to do anything. There was nothing else going on. We were just happy to see out the game, and that's what Melbourne City were doing in this game. Yep.
And both of the marquee quality strikes, we stood off by a long way. We were not marking the players who scored these goals. There was some decent build-up play in both examples, but there was also some just horrendous marking.
Well, like the fact that delete was so, is that how you say it?
Delete?
Like control alt delete? I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's delete. Right. But
I'm going to call him control alt from now on. Okay. But he was just in so much space because Mitch Nichols, I think, is the culprit here. He just got dragged into the box so hard and into no man's land, and all of a sudden there was an entire half of field for delete to run onto.
I mean, I want to blame Mitch But it's not entirely his fault. He's playing in his position he's pretty unfamiliar with. He defended like you'd expect an attacking mid to defend. And when they're coming back at all and helping out, the defenders are pretty grateful for that. And he gets dragged pretty wide and pretty deep when in reality he's playing as a holding mid. And so he has a spot the defenders expect him to be, and he's not in the spot he's expected to be.
Total box, right?
Whereas Singh is doing what the attacking mid you expect, and he's just tracking a man, and you know, he's helpful. But Mitch is doing what he would do every other game, and normally you'd be like, that's great that he's tracked back and helped out. In this situation, they expect him to be in a spot and he's not there. And that is his fault, but I also don't blame him for it. It's not a role he's comfortable with.
Which brings us to a point where in previous weeks we've actually talked about Mitch Nichols doing a DM role. We've specifically said we think he could probably do a job. For me, I didn't believe he could. I was more comfortable with the Roofer-Mundy combination. We talked last week again about Kupczynski needing to step up to the grade. The decision to start Mitch Nichols ahead of Roofer seems like an odd one, considering how Roofer has been playing and the good combination that he's playing with Mundy. I agree, last week we were poor in central mid, but I don't think it's dragging Roofer is necessarily the right step there.
The fact that Roofer's looked the best central mid at the club is 4 or 5 games in is a massive thing for Roofer. Like, those first few games, there's no way you could have told me before the season that Kupczynski and, Mundy are lesser central midfielders than Roofer is. I wouldn't have believed you, but that's the case.
Well, so I think Roofer's become so prominent and done such a good job because Mundy, of the combination with Mundy, not necessarily because he's a better player.
You would have played Mundy and Roofer with each other rather than Mundy and Nichols.
Exactly, and that kind of breakaway, and that kind of formation allows us with the two fast strikers and Singh to break quickly, because Singh sees a good pass and he can get it to the strikers. We've got two quick strikers, no matter who they play them up front and have a go. So I think that selection of Nichols in that role was, it feels like a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to a poor central midfield performance in the one game, but then dragging the wrong combination, the wrong player from that combination.
Did Roofer come on at all in this game?
I was even on the bench. I'm not sure if he was.
I'll look it up on my phone.
This is what I was going to say. Do we know if he was dragged or if he was injured? Because I'm actually not sure.
I've heard nothing.
I agree. I think we've talked about it before, and I think some people are more convinced that Nichols can start there. I don't think I'm in that camp. I think he can play there. I think he's an option in there because I think he's better in that defensive role than, say, Singh is going to be.
We're a little limited
in options at the moment. So I think him coming on there for the last 20 or something wouldn't worry me, but him starting as a defensive mid does seem very weird to me. That isn't his skill set, and you would need a good reason to be doing it, in my opinion. I don't think it's just a like-for-like swap, as some people might think.
I think he does have a good reason. I think the good reason he wanted to start him is because we have looked poor in attack since game one.
Yeah, but see, wouldn't you have played, say, two more advanced midfielders then and left someone holding by themselves and pick someone to do that role? Admittedly, we are playing a very defensive setup, so you want a defensive setup. But if you're thinking you want to play Mitch Nichols to help out an attack, you need to play him where he's helping out an attack.
I agree. I also think the problem is you'd want to play Mundy by himself, but Mundy doesn't have the fitness yet to do that role.
He doesn't for 90 minutes.
I actually think your better course of action would be change the formation entirely and do 4 across the back. Play your 2 holders.
Interesting.
But perhaps do a 4-2-3-1. So you're still more defensively minded, but you're not expecting your fullbacks to do a lot of the work up and down the wings. You're playing one of your quick strikers, probably Krishna, as your point of the attack. You can still play Singh. You could play Nichols, and you could possibly fit in a Burgess or someone along those lines. Yep. Maybe even play Kikache as in that kind of role with Doyle wide on the left. Bring in Fox in the central in the defence. Yeah, there's plenty of possibilities in there, but that kind of formation fills in that space a bit better and takes a bit more pressure off Mundy.
Yeah, so Roofer wasn't injured because he played 10 minutes at the end.
Oh, did he?
Well, the game was essentially a week ago now for us, so it was a little while ago.
Yeah.
So that's Friday, we're recording on Thursday.
Mm. It's interesting. The other interesting thing is
this was the first time we saw Kupczynski make the field the squad, even, I think.
He'd been in match day squad, but left out of the off the bench. So he was the 17th man.
Yeah, he's never been on the bench up until this point.
He's never been on the bench, so it's the first time.
He played 20 minutes at the end. He came on for Sapri, which is An interesting decision in a game that we're 2-0 down in.
If you're pushing Mitch Nichols forward into the 10 role, I can understand that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and because that's possibly what he was thinking, is that Nichols offers X amount of ability and options at 10. Bring on Kopchinski to help Mundy, who's obviously got the fitness issues at this point, and that's probably where that logic goes. Yeah. I wouldn't have made that change. I think Singh's a better footballer than Mitch Nichols, and I think I would play Singh in every single game.
Yeah.
But I don't know what Rudan is specifically saying for those people to put on the pitch, so there could be other stuff there.
I think it's interesting the two times we've made tactical changes here, because if Rufus not injured, this is definitely a tactical change. Yeah. Then both times they haven't really shown any dividends, right? We've tinkered with the lineup, and if anything, it's gone worse. Mm-hmm. And we've tinkered with things, you know, that weren't really that broken. I mean, Rufa, I think we all agree, was doing well in there. He had a bit of an off night, and that's all. And to drop in an attacking mid in a reasonably unfamiliar role instead, just to see how it goes, is an interesting one. And then, yeah, again, dragging Singh, and, you know, we saw the changes with Burgess the game before. You know, it feels a bit like tinkering just because it hasn't gone quite right. It suggests to me a little bit of uncertainty in what he's doing, rather than Ernie was kind of the opposite. He was so confident it was going to come right, and his tactics were good, that he stuck with it probably too long. When things did need tinkering, he wasn't willing to do it. And this feels a little bit to me like we've swung back the other way. It's a new coach at an unfamiliar level, tinkering a little and hoping it's magically going to come together. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but I think we can see the two times he's tried it so far, it hasn't come good. So it'll be interesting to see if he reverts to what was going well, or if he keeps tinkering there.
Yeah.
To try and find the golden combination.
The biggest problem with these last two games that I've had is it's highlighted how poor the opposition we played in the first two rounds was. The Jets weren't that good, Brisbane weren't that good, and if those teams were better on the day, they would have been able to exploit the same things that have been exploited later on in terms of lack of our chance creation, counterattack football. Those things, if they were better at, they could have won those games. And that means that we have 4 points from teams that were not that great. And we're 4 games in and we've had 2 pretty poor performances.
Yeah. Our chance creation is getting worse though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's not getting better. We did, in fact, in those early games have some chances and we got some goals.
Yeah,
it's gone to one shot on target out of a whole 90-minute performance.
We don't really have goals, though. We have a cross from Stephen Taylor that got headed into its own net that should have been an easy catch, and a penalty awarded by the VAR.
Which was saved, actually.
Yeah. But, like, this is the follow-up. It doesn't count as an open play goal. Like, that's all we have. We've played 3 games now without scoring, and we've created an own goal and a dodgy penalty from VAR. That's all we've created this season so far.
I think
that's a problem.
If you look at shot numbers and shots on target, though, they were better in those games than they have been since then.
But it's still not goals, though.
Correct. I agree. The goals we've actually scored, but I think in terms of chance creation, we were creating more chances. Yep. We're not necessarily finishing them. But even the chances are dropping away now. We're not even creating those anymore, really. Yeah.
I think the teams that we're playing the last couple of weeks have obviously had the advantage of seeing the two previous games, seeing what Rudan is actually going to put on the field and changing accordingly. And that's possibly why our chance creation has started to fall
away.
I'm not
sure that Melbourne City actually did that much. I mean, I know you haven't seen the game cam, so I'm not really trying to criticise you here, but I'm not sure that Melbourne City actually did that much to shut us down. They didn't appear to be marking Singh out of the game or making sure that Roy Krishna always had someone fast marking him. They didn't appear to be doing those things. And I might be wrong, because like I said, I tuned out of a lot of this game because it was that rubbish. But they just looked like they were just weathering the storm and not having to do much of it.
Yeah, and I haven't checked all the stats, but I did have a glance at them a couple of days ago, and I know that, for example, number of crosses was exactly the same, 11 apiece. So it wasn't like we weren't, you know, creating stuff, but for them, that was turning into chances. For us, I think our cross accuracy was, I'm going to call it 10%, but check the actual figures. But, you know, we weren't getting those to our men at all. So, you know, why wouldn't you just let us have our crosses? You know, you didn't need to shut us down because there wasn't anything happening in the middle there.
Yeah. And these last two performances feel like it's the same old Phoenix who finished ninth. And that's a real problem. Mm. After the positivity of round one, after new coach coming in, it's just the same old Phoenix.
To me, it feels different, but the same problems. You know, we are going to struggle and it's going to feel the same, but it does feel different. You know, we are trying different things and it's a different tactical formation we're playing, but the result is still the same old Phoenix.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel, you know, there were a first season there, few seasons there where it was the same personnel and the same tactics and the same results. This feels at least slightly different. There feels like there's some new players in there and we're trying things a little differently. You know, it's a younger squad. There's, you know, some stuff in there that feels new and fresh, but it still ain't working.
Do you think, have you seen anything that would suggest to you that we could be a top four team? I won't say top four team, but fourth to sixth team this season? Do you think we could finish mid-table?
No, I still think we're going to finish eighth.
I think yes, but only with significant change. We'd need to shop in the January window and potentially even earlier. You know, we've talked about the loan option maybe being a thing. I think the bare bones are there, but something has to change up front. And that's not to say that Burns, Williams, and Krishna are not good strikers. They are.
They're not doing much.
But they're in the same mold, and they are all confidence players. And at the moment, they're not scoring goals, and none of them have the confidence.
I think if that clicks, they can bang in two or three a game and win games. Yep. But at the moment, it's very much not clicking, and there's little signs of it clicking, little signs of individual brilliance to use a Ned Zelick term, but there's just nothing there.
Well, and this is where I wonder if maybe Mitch Nichols might be the answer, but in that Singh role, because he is a guy who will create some stuff. We've seen him in many games in past seasons just take a game by the scruff of the neck and drag a goal out of nothing by himself. He is a player who can do that. Singh can to some extent, but we've never really seen him do it at this level. We've seen him do it at handy prem level, and he can create a bit of magic out of nothing. We're not seeing that happen here yet, but I think for those guys up front, someone behind them creating a bit of magic might be what they need, and he might be the guy to spark that if anyone was to.
That's the first time someone on this podcast has ever used the words Mitch Nichols might be the answer, unironically.
I know. We all know my true feelings about Mitch Nichols.
But the thing is, I don't disagree with you. Like
I do, but that's because
he's done it to us enough bloody times, right?
I think Singh is the better footballer.
And I completely agree.
I agree he hasn't been delivering quite what we need him to, but he's not alone in that team.
No.
We have seen from him those flashes of brilliance that he has come out with.
Yeah.
This season, no, but we look at, say, Perth last season and Melbourne City last season, that ability is 100% there. When we're playing long balls to wide strikers and long balls to wide fullbacks that are bombing on, that doesn't aid a number 10 in creating anything.
No, but this is what I'm saying is I'm ignoring team to some extent because I agree, completely agree. Singh is the technically better footballer for sure, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a guy who's going to go, screw it, this isn't happening. I'm going to beat a man and I'm going to shoot. And that's going, I'm ignoring all the guys around me because it's not happening. I'm just going to grab this game and I'm going to have a go.
And
Singh, his shooting hasn't been up to scratch that much, you know, and he doesn't have the same kind of level of just experience to just go, yeah, this is a time I can just beat that man and have a dink and see what happens. Whereas that is the sort of thing Mitch Nichols has, you know, made his living off for years, is scoring slightly jammy goals out of the top of the box just because he has a go.
But if we look at Nichols, he's had plenty of minutes in the last three games. The last three games where we needed him to step up and do exactly that, and he hasn't done it. He had quite a bit of time off last season, obviously, after being let go by Perth. And was he really getting the minutes he needed at Perth?
The minutes he's been getting for us have been towards the end of games. They've been off the bench. They've been in a different position. You know, I don't think we've gone to him, hey, you're starting in that role and you're doing it.
Agreed, but he's being brought on as the man to do exactly what you asked him to do and what you've just said you want him to do, and he hasn't done those things. Admittedly, it wasn't that in Melbourne City. He was doing a different role in Melbourne City, but the game in Wanderers, he would need to do that. Game against Brisbane, that's exactly what he needed. Brisbane particularly, because of that game, that's a massive two extra points that we've got. And we're probably having a different conversation now if we're sitting on 6 points, two wins out of four. I think
that's a fair point.
Yeah,
we haven't seen him do it.
You haven't seen him do it, and I don't know whether he now has that in his locker.
Yep, and that's fair. We don't know that. He, as you say, hasn't played a lot of football recently, and he's got some minutes for us, but prior to that, he wasn't playing much. Whereas, we've seen Singh do it at a handy prem level. I would love to see him do it at this level, but I think he's more the sort to look to play a magic ball into Krishna or whatever, and so far that wavelength hasn't been working and it's not clicking.
Okay, and I think that's exactly what his strength is, the ability to find that man with a good play, with a good ball into space, sees the runs that other people don't, and it's, I think it's a consequence of the tactics that we're using, and we're not using a number 10 to the full extent that we could be using a number 10.
Should we be?
And yeah, I think, well, it hasn't worked in the first four games, has it? We've got one win and one draw. A jammy win, good win, but jammy win. The draw was a game that we should have won, but we didn't put in a performance that let us do it. Played off the park by Western Sydney, yep, and obviously beaten by a poor side in Melbourne City. There are points there that we should have got. We haven't played. Melbourne City is probably the highest ranked team pre-season, yep, out of all the teams that we've played.
And on pedigree.
Yeah, we haven't played a Perth, a Sydney or a Victory, and all those look like they're going to be the top three.
Very worried about all of those games.
Yeah, exactly. So that's nine games we've still got to go against those guys, and if we're putting performances like this against the Melbourne Cities and the Wanderers, yeah, what performances are going to come out against those guys? So, yeah, we need something out of a 10. We definitely need something completely different out of the tactics that just don't seem to be working.
Speaking of formations, Dave, you know you have a bone to pick with formations here?
Oh, yeah, sure. The social media around the lineup just bothers me. There was a whole conversation, not started by me, but started by some other people around that graphic, and it has annoyed me for a long time.
You're talking about the image of the with, yep, all the players on it that they put out on Facebook, yep, and Twitter.
It's like a 4-4-2, isn't it?
No, it's a 4-3-3 that they put out this time, and has been a 4-3-3 for most of the games this year. We've had Kakache up front most weeks. This week obviously wasn't in the lineup, but who did we have up front instead? It must have been Doyle.
Or Fenton or something?
Yeah.
Fenton up front?
And it's just silly. I don't like. I remember having a conversation several years back with a Phoenix staffer saying that at the time it was, you know, a bit of a jokey tactic to mess with the opposing manager. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of funny. Yeah. And if that's true, then that is kind of funny. But what it doesn't explain to me is why the lineup you put out on Facebook and Twitter needs to match that. There's no requirement for that to be the same. Surely you filled in a team sheet. You have to match the team sheet, obviously, but the formation that you show to your fans should be the formation you're playing. The number of times just this season where people have been sitting in the stadium and you hear the people two rows behind you who, you know, don't necessarily come to the games that often going, oh, Libby up front, that's weird. And, you know, they're genuinely confused by it. The comms from the club shouldn't be confusing their own fans. You can put the line up as we know it, because that's not tricking anyone. Honestly, no one thinks Libby's up front.
By the time you get to an hour, by the time you get to an hour prior to kickoff, the formation that you put out isn't going to make much of a difference to the tactics that the manager's going to come up with that position.
And honestly, I don't think it did anyway. I do find it on some level a little bit funny that they were doing that behind the scenes. That seems funny to me, and I'm okay with that, but I don't know why you're doing it to your own fans. I don't know why you're thinking that the opposing manager might be checking your Twitter and going, ooh, we better change everything. It's a 4-3-3. That seems insane to me. Honestly, just show us what's actually happening. Those of us who are around it enough know what it is, and the only people you're marginalizing are your casual fans, and they're the people you least want to marginalize. We want them coming every week.
Well, they're trying to get those guys on the dance cam, and that's not working. So,
Dancing. Stop telling me to dance.
The thing you haven't mentioned there is that even the formation that was on the team sheet was just plain wrong this time around, because they had named Alex Rufer in that formation, and Alex Rufer wasn't starting the game. So that's on the graphic, the picture of the team sheet I saw. So even that's just blatantly wrong as well.
That could have been a late change, to be fair.
Could have been.
Yeah, but you know, you're just changing it in both places. I don't know, anyway.
Yeah, but it could have been changed after formation. That's right. We were talking about,
this is why I thought that Rufer was injured, because he was on the team sheet, he was in the starting lineup, and then he wasn't. I remember now, we were sitting at the pub looking at that, and I thought, oh, maybe he's injured. That's why he's late withdrawal.
Yeah, but
clearly
who
wasn't,
knows?
Because he still came on.
Anyway, that's 20 minutes on that shit game of football.
Do we want to talk about the VAR? I want to talk about the VAR.
The fucking penalty bullshit. Yes, I absolutely want to talk about the VAR.
Mark, 20 minutes?
Only have yourself to blame for the edit you're about to make.
Oh, no. So, this is fucking ridiculous. Okay, I'm going to preface this by saying I don't believe either this one or jurors last week should be handball.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They should not be handball. There is no deliberate movement of arm towards ball. There's no deliberate anything. I think they should be play on. Yeah. That's an easy call to make. If we're going to be giving these, which apparently we are these days, so you look at the World Cup. The moment the ball hit someone's arm in the World Cup, it was a penalty.
Yep.
I'm okay with that if we're consistent. If everybody knows, oh, that hit his arm, that's a penalty, then it's fine. We saw that in the World Cup. By the time we had three or four of these in the World Cup, we saw it had an arm. We all knew penalty's going to be awarded. Sure enough, VAR comes back, penalty awarded. The fact that this time around, having the same VAR in the box, Nick Waldron was in the box of both of these, last week upholding the penalty decision against Andrew Durante, this week overturning the essentially penalty decision against whoever it was, is just ridiculous. There is no consistency in the VAR in this league. There is no way for fans to see a replay and go, oh, I know what's going to come up here, and then have it happen. That just does not exist in the A-League. It's such a gamble. They're literally rolling the dice in the VAR booth about what they're going to do on each one. There is no difference here between the two where the ball's been kicked at point-blank range at the defender. The fact that everybody, including Melbourne City fans, see this replay and go, oh, that's going to be a penalty, because we were all thinking inside or outside the box, and clearly it's inside the box. And at that point, the easy decision to give is a penalty. The fact they overturned this was just farcical. You saw Mark Rudan on the TV saying, where's the yellow card for handball? Where's the yellow card for handball? He didn't even consider, like us, that they were going to overturn this call. The fact that there are such different decisions from the VAR is just the worst. It's the lack of consistency that gets me. Like I said at the start, I don't think I lose a handball. I think they made the right call here to overturn this. But we need that consistency across the games, especially from the same person in the VAR. There is always going to be a difference between different referees. We can't completely get rid of that. They're humans. But it was the same fucking person, and he's a shit referee as well. So there we go. Nick Waldron, I'm not your biggest fan right now.
Well, and it's an interesting one because we literally had the head of referees. What's his name? I can't think of it right.
Ben Wilson.
Coming out this week and saying we don't want the VAR to be relitigating overly subjective or technical decisions. This is the definition of that because it just was. I mean, all of the arguments that people are making, you said before there's no difference between the two. I think there is one difference, but the thing is, all of the things that are actually in the laws of the game and the guidance to referees are the same. You know, when we're talking about distance between the players, we're talking about natural body position, we're talking about all of that stuff, the same arguments can be made between the two. I mean, people want to say, you know, oh, that's a natural body position. I would argue Juras, when he's jumping and turning, his arm out the way it was, it's definitely a natural position.
He's trying to turn his back towards the ball and hit it with his back. Yeah, but
I would argue that running with your arm in front of you is demonstrably more unnatural than turning with your arm sticking out like that. But, you know, you can make those arguments, and that is definitely getting into the territory of overly subjective and technical. I agree with you. Neither of these should be handballs. But if we're going to give one, we've got to give the other.
Yeah.
The only difference that exists here, and you can correct me on this, is not in the laws of the game or the guidance to referees, as far as I'm aware, and that's where the ball would go if it didn't strike the hand. Because I have seen people argue that if it doesn't hit his hand, it hits him in the chest or the face.
Yeah.
And therefore, that means, oh, not a penalty. I'm like, that's not in the rules here. It strikes his hand. That's the only thing we should be looking at here. Whereas in the juror example, doesn't hit the hand, it's a shot on goal. What? And I'm not aware of any reason that should be a factor.
No.
Regardless of whether physics says it should
be. So from refereeing amateur football, and it is amateur football, so it's different. The number of players who think that where the ball ends up after the handball, if they gain an advantage of handballing it, it should be a handball. It's not. Like, it's whether you handball or not. It doesn't matter if you handball it out for a throw-in or handball it to your feet and slot it in the back of the net. It's all down to the intention, surely, according to the laws. There's no thing about whether it's going to hit you on the face afterwards or not, if it's going to go on the goal.
There's plenty of pro refs that don't know that rule as well. So.
Well, the thing is, though, that the interpretations, that the way FIFA are clearly telling the referees to do this is that there is much more grounds for giving handballs than the laws as written would state.
Correct.
And I'm okay with that, like I said, if we apply it consistently.
If we apply the same across the board.
And I have absolutely no problem with the VAR here giving a penalty. I can't understand how the referee, who was literally standing right on the penalty line, because you can see it in the screenshot, couldn't tell this was inside the box. It's a good meter inside the box. I can't explain that. But you know what? Erring on the side of foul, checking the footage, giving the penalty, I'm okay with that. I think I'm okay with the VAR coming and saying this was inside the box, you should be giving a penalty. I'm not okay with the VAR, like you said, overturning subjective decisions about whether it should be handball or not.
The issue here is we've seen an example of, obviously not handball, but a very similar scenario in round one with a foul on Bruno Fornaroli.
Yeah.
And it's given as a foul outside the box. It's a very soft foul.
Yeah.
And when they check it on VAR, they determine it's inside. What they don't do is check the quality of the foul. They go, there was some contact. It's very light. And I think if you were to actually review that as the decision, you probably go, it's not a foul. He lightly brushes him and he falls down. But in that scenario, they only checked whether or not it was inside and whether or not any contact had been made. There was contact, boom, we're not looking at it any further. In this case, the footage clearly shows it strike him in the arm. So cool, right decision there, but it's inside the box, penalty. We shouldn't be going over the quality of the handball decision.
That's the other thing.
And that's precisely what we see happen here. And I think it's marginal at best, given the decisions we've seen in previous weeks, whether or not this is a handball. I think by the laws of the game, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But if we're going on previous decisions and setting precedent, this probably is.
And if it hit him, if it missed his arm and hit him in the face, I have no problem with VAR overturning that. Absolutely, with that.
At that
no
handball. Clear and obvious error, that's fine. This is not clear and obvious.
The other thing that is a technical detail that irks me about VAR, if this actually was outside the box and they looked at it and saw no handball or whatever, the moment it's outside the box, the VAR can't rule on it. If that was outside the box, we'd have a free kick on the edge of the area. But the fact that because it was inside the box, the VAR could rule on it, they could overrule the whole thing. I don't like that. I don't know what I prefer, the VAR letting something go and saying that was actually inside the box, that thing you saw, and giving a soft penalty, or overturning something that they have seen was in the box but wasn't a foul, so therefore shouldn't have been. I don't know what I prefer.
I
prefer the penalty being given.
I prefer no fucking VAR. Well, that's what I prefer.
The thing is, that's not an option anymore.
No, and that's the worst part.
The ship has sailed.
It's actually quite funny listening to this side of the world talk about how poor the VAR is and how much we don't want it.
And then you listen to Football Ramble and they want the VAR.
They're not the only ones. Everyone coming out of Britain at the moment is like, we want the VAR.
That's the thing, though.
World Cup VAR was great.
Exactly.
It was fantastic. The quality of the VAR decisions is entirely dictated by how well they apply the rules. And not just the rules of the game, not the laws of the game, but the rules they've set for VAR. And the World Cup was very consistent in how they applied rules. And we've seen a lot of stuff coming out of Ben Wilson and coming out of the Fox Sport platform and the videos explaining stuff and all sorts of things. But the decisions are very easy to explain either way. I mean, I could sit there and write explanations that are the exact opposite of what they've decided, and it would sound plausible. But the problem is we're trying to explain decisions after the fact rather than going, actually, how about we just apply a consistent set of rules rather than looking to justify our decisions as right after we've made them. And that's very much what those decisions have felt like. You know, all of the talk about an unnatural body position for juror and whatever sounds very plausible, and that's fine. But if that's the standard we're applying, we need to apply it to all the decisions, not then look at the next one and go, hand in front of you like that while running is a perfectly natural position. Because it just doesn't ring true. It's just arguing the toss, particularly when they specifically said, we're not going to argue the toss. That's not what we're here to do. Yeah. We're just here to make, you know, clear-cut decisions. This is clearly strikes him in the arm. Was it inside or outside? Make that call.
See, for me, that call should literally be, was it inside or outside? Because the ref has already decided.
Agreed. And that's what we saw in the Fornaroli one. They said, was it inside or outside?
And that's perfect. I will take that, because the only way, as you say, the VAR can come in and say, actually, you know what? Didn't hit his arm, hit his chest, hit his face, hit his back, hit his ass. Doesn't matter. Didn't hit his arm. That can be overturned. But in this situation, because it's definitely hit his arm, the ref thinks it's a handball, the only thing they should be able to do is tell them where it happened.
Yeah. Well, and the crazy thing is we have this phrase that they're using themselves.
Maximum.
Clear and obvious.
Yeah, clear and obvious, and minimum interference for maximum effect. Mm.
Was there anything about this that was clear and obviously wrong?
No.
Yes. It was inside the box.
Yeah.
That's the only part of
this.
No. Yeah, but this is the only part of this that was clear and obvious, was whether it was inside or outside. That was clear and obviously wrong. The handball, there's nothing clear and obvious. It's subjective at best. Mm.
All right, I was going to move us on to the rest of the round, but my phone's internet has stopped working, so I'm just going to pull some results out of my ass. I think someone won 4-1.
Give me a sec, mate. I'll bring that up.
Melbourne Victory beat the Mariners 4-1 last thing on Sunday. Was it their first win of the season? Second win? I don't know. I'm lost without the internet. I've watched no other football this weekend other than the Phoenix, so.
Cam's going to tell us all what happened.
Let's just fill in with...
There was a fun VAR decision in the Perth game.
Oh, was it? Tell me about
interesting.
It.
You'll have to watch it yourself, but it's also a handball at the top of the box.
Yeah.
The handball is given as outside. It strikes him quite high on the arm, yeah, but he moves his shoulder towards it. I think there's an interesting discussion to be had about whether or not that's a handball, mm-hmm, by the same measure, but I can see the arguments there. But there's another defender in the way, so the one camera angle they have as to whether it's inside or outside the box...
Can't see it.
...is obscure. Skewered, and so it's above the line, you can see, but you can't tell by how much. You can't really tell, and they go, we don't have enough evidence to overturn this to say that it is inside, therefore we're just going to have it right on the edge. But it was a very interesting one where...
I think I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I was like, this is interesting. They weren't discussing the handball at all, because there's some movement towards it, but it's quite high on the arm it hits them. I think if you were reviewing, yeah, that, it could have got interesting, but... Obscured camera, they've gone, we're sticking with the original decision.
I imagine...
Great decision. Yeah. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Anyway, Cam, the rest of the round, now that your internet's working?
Yeah, so obviously we were Friday night. Saturday was a 2-2 draw between Western Sydney and Brisbane. Goals from Riera for Western Sydney, both of them. Lopez and Taggart for the Brisbane Roar.
Well, so the one that went up 2-0 in that game, didn't they?
Yeah, 17th minute, they're leading 2-0 and got, yeah, picked back to draw it. Yep. Next was the Jets and Sydney drawing 1-1, a late equaliser, 87th minute from Coburn to Markov Brost's 20th minute.
Markov, did you say?
Yeah, to Markov.
Markov Brosk. I think you called Alex Brosk Markov.
No, went, Markov Brosk.
That is a
opener.
Name. Okay, cool. Yep.
Yeah, cool. Next was Adelaide 0, Perth 2. Goals to Keo and Economides,
yep,
to make 2-0. And the last one around was the 4-1 result you've already mentioned. Victory scores were Honda, Troisi, Brown, and Hope. And for Mariners was Chabal. Sorry if I've pronounced that incorrectly.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Chabal.
So looking at the table, Glory are on top.
That's interesting, eh?
Yeah, with 3 wins and a draw from
the
4 matches,
effect?
10 points. I think it's the Popper effect to attract good players.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, he's good with Wheaters in Sydney, so, you know, it's definitely good. Sydney next on 8 points, then Melbourne City on 7, Victory on 6, sorry. Western Sydney on 5 points, Adelaide round out the top 6 on 5 points. We're 7th on 4 points. It feels odd with the 2 performances we've had that we're sitting in 7th, and, you know, it feels like we should be.
It's points on the
lower
board.
Yeah,
points,
I know. It's really,
the thing
it's
with
really
this
odd.
League is that, especially down the bottom, you put 2 or 3 wins together and you rock it up the table. And with so few points available for people at the moment, 4 yeah. points is actually not that bad comparatively. So,
and the 3 teams below us have all failed to win a game. So Brisbane's got 3 draws, 1 loss on 3 points. Newcastle on 2 points with 2 draws, and Central Coast Mariners on 2 points with 2 draws to rock up
yeah.
the table. And I honestly think the going off performances so far, the bottom 4 could be the bottom 4 come end of season.
Yep.
Only question mark I think I have is whether the Jets, would you get a point against Sydney, even if it's an undeserved point?
Well, can they do what they did last year?
Yeah, like, exactly. And I still think they may make the 6 at the expense of either Adelaide or Western
yeah.
Sydney. So,
yeah. Can I just say, thank fuck for the international break.
It's certainly fallen at the right time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's
for
great.
Us. It certainly gives gives Rudan an extra week to, you know, give your boys some time off.
I don't give a shit about that. I just don't have to watch a shit for Phoenix performance this weekend. That's why I'm enjoying it. So,
Jesus yeah. Christ, Patrick.
The Handy Prem. How ironic is it that the first actual international break that the Phoenix get in the A-League, we don't actually have an international and all our players are available? How ironic is that?
Yeah.
The Handy Prem. I didn't see any of this, but Team Wellington, or 2 games in Wellington on Sunday, T-Dubs versus Southern and Canterbury versus the Phoenix. T-Dubs got a 3-1 win, 3-1 win over Southern. Goals to Mario Illich from his own half, Jack Henry Sinclair, Nathan Halamariam, enough to balance out Abdullah Al-Khalisi's goal.
So it wasn't from his own half. It's dead on halfway.
Like halfway.
When you watch it, which rather play, if it's in his own half,
he's
we're
in
talking
his own half.
Blades of grass.
He's in his own half when he kicks it. So yeah, the ball's on half.
Halfway.
It's an impressive goal.
The ball's in, though, in football. The whole ball hasn't left his half yet, right?
The halfway line. The halfway line belongs to both halves.
So it's
the opposite of a DMZ. Everybody owns this area. So.
Yeah. It was a justified lead they took. They were far and away the stronger team. And at times, it felt like they were literally camped in that half. They were just so much more dominant. Sure, Southern had opportunities, but none of them were particularly clear.
Their goal was pretty jammy from what I hear.
It was very jammy. If I remember rightly, it was from a header from a set piece, and it just, it wasn't a good goal by any stretch of the imagination. Take the chances that they're there. They would be stoked to go in 1-1 at half time. It certainly didn't deserve to go in a 1-1 at half time. And when T-Dubs pushed on in the second half, honestly, I think I can judge how dominant my team has been in a game by how many images I take in a game, and I took 1,000 in that game.
Yeah.
And that generally means we have had a lot of the ball in attacking positions.
Yep, fair. Yeah. Was it well fought by Team Wellington, despite not having as much as they probably should have on the scoreboard at the end, to still have a 3-1 win?
Yes, that flattered Southern. Very much flattered Southern. We had all the ball, we had all the chances.
Does that mean the Tigers are wasteful with chances?
No, it doesn't mean they were wasteful with chances. I think they were being quite patient with their build-up to create opportunities. So the opportunities weren't there weren't a large number of them.
I guess Southern would have been defending quite deeply.
Southern were defending
deeply.
In numbers.
Yep.
In numbers would be fair to say. They were. There was a big blue wall parked up in front of their goal. It wasn't that we were wasteful opportunities. We were finding them obviously hard to come by, but honestly, I think we should have been. We probably should have had at least another two, and that would have been a fairer scoreline.
And then I think there was an hour left on this game, 45 minutes left on this game, when everyone could travel over from DVF, but at Newtown Park.
They kicked off late at Newtown Park because Canterbury's flight was late. So I actually got to Newtown Park just before the end of the first half.
Oh, right, that's excellent.
And saw Canterbury score there first.
I didn't get a chance to say this last week, but it was absolutely ridiculous that the games were on at the same time. Do 1 and 3 p.m. or something like that. Like,
well, so this is not the only time this is happening this season either. No. We do have a 2 p.m., 2 p.m. kickoff.
And one at Jerry Collins and one at DVF.
David Farrington. Yeah. So you literally can't go between them. Yeah. No matter what.
Because they're the same crowd. It's the same people at both of these games.
If you throw in the National Women's League as well, it happens all over the country for the whole season. It's just silly. I mean, I think it's this weekend. There's two kickoffs at the same time in Auckland, one National Women's League and one Handy Prem. It's like, I accept that that's not necessarily going to be the same crowd, but I think there is a large crossover there and you should give people maximum chance, particularly when it's not like the schedule's so jam-packed you've got games running all day. You can have a 1 and a 4 or 1 and a 3 totally fine.
They don't have the stadium problem that the A-League has either. These parks are always available. Yeah. So
I think the other thing they could look at with Wellington, because it's the same crowd.
Double header.
Yeah. If they're both at home on the same weekend and you're not putting the Weenecks at the stadium, chuck them both at Newtown Park. It's the one place with the facilities to actually do that. You can have a 1 o'clock and a 4 o'clock and the games would be absolutely fine. You have the same people there having 5 hours in the sun enjoying the 4 hours.
I mean,
the
issue with that is that, you know, the teams want to play at home. They want to play at their home. Mm. And T-Dubs do not consider Newtown Park to
even
actually be at home.
T-Dubs at 1 at DVF and Weenix at 3 at Newtown Park is perfectly fine.
Also, if the facilities were available, Weenix don't have a home ground.
No, correct.
They're playing four different places.
DVF has two changing rooms. You can't do a double header.
Exactly. That's the only problem. Yeah. But the Weenix have got eight home games this season, 9 home games this season, and they're playing them at 4 different grounds.
Yeah. But you don't need a double header. You need to not be stupid.
You just need to schedule them so it's possible.
And they can be 2 hours apart and you still see both games. You might miss 5 minutes of one, but putting them 1 hour apart is just ridiculous. Anyway, Hawke's Bay went down 2-0 to Hamilton Wanderers, and that is all sorts of problems for Hawke's Bay, and Brett Angel might finally lose his job. Jordan Shaw and Tommy Semmy getting the goals for Hamilton. White Tuck had a 3-0 win over Tasman. 3 goals there, all pretty late on, all in the last 20 minutes of the game.
But they are flying in for them at the moment. That's 8 in 2 games they've got.
Really? Jeez, yeah, you're right.
To be fair, against the bottom 2 teams.
And on TV, a Dylan Mackinnon goal was enough to get Auckland City 1-0 up over Eastern Suburbs, although it looked a lot like Eastern Suburbs had scored a goal. It was one of those, was it over the line or not? And I think without goal line technology, we couldn't say for certain, but I think from one replay that Zuby might have just got his hand there in time, but it was certainly controversial at the time. The Eastern Suburbs players thought that it scored. And a 1-1 draw with it would have been great for T-Dubs, but Auckland continue their quite impressive surge at the top of the table.
Yeah, those top three do look very, very good compared to everybody else.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is the Handy Prem. What's happening next weekend for the Handy Prem? Should we look that up?
So I know T-Dubs are at home this weekend, 2 o'clock on Sunday. I think they're playing Hawke's Bay.
Southern are pretty excited about having the TV game.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
As they should be. Their one and only TV game. It's costing them quite a bit. So
I am,
everyone
I am
should watch that and make sure their viewer numbers are boosted extremely high so that
I'm going to record
they
it
get more
and
games.
Just play it back when I'm not watching the TV because I'm not watching the game.
It's utterly, as someone who's not a Southern supporter, it's utterly farcical that one team has six games on TV this season and one team has one. Yeah. And we're not actually asking Sky to send their TV cameras down to Dunedin. Nobody's asking for that.
No.
Just put Southern away games on the TV. It's not hard.
Yep.
Put the games in Auckland that Southern are playing on TV.
Three Southern away games on TV would not hurt.
It should
you could
be three,
do the same thing for Canterbury. Yeah. Every team plays three games in Auckland.
Yeah.
There you go. It's easy enough to get to Hamilton and it's easy enough to get to Wellington. And Christchurch, to be fair. Those games can easily be covered. It would be nice if they did a Dunedin and a Nelson and a Napier.
And if you're not going to do it, charge the TV fee per game to the clubs. Don't charge Southern the same amount you're charging Waitaki where they get six games. That's just not fair. Yeah.
I actually think if
on
they
these
did
clubs
that
are strapped for cash,
teams would go, don't put us on
and
TV.
And that's fine too.
Yeah.
If they get the choice, anyway. The fact that it's compulsory and some clubs are getting more value for it is just ridiculous. This weekend, Hamilton taking Leeds and Suburbs. So Hamilton probably won't get up a winning streak because Leeds and Suburbs will win that. These are all Sunday, 2 p.m. other than the TV game. Auckland taking on Canterbury, Tasman hosting the Wenix, and like you said, T-Dubs hosting Hawke's Bay at AVF, 2 p.m. Sunday. TV game is Waitaki versus Southern, so as we mentioned.
Let's get down and have a watch of Brett Angell lose his mop again.
Yeah, I'd quite enjoy him getting sent off and then sacked. That would be an entertaining way to spend my football week.
You could say I enjoy it 20% more when that happens.
Come on. Yes.
What's that table doing on the...
What's the table doing? Oh, yeah, I think I can click this button here. That was the wrong button.
I'm going to show you what Google does when you search this properly.
Well, apparently T-Dubs are on top of the table, although they've played one more game than everyone else, essentially, where they are on top points. Auckland 4 wins from 4, so they are kind of more likely to be on top. Catch-ups have been played.
Yeah, but we've got better goal difference, I think, than at the moment.
But we've also played another game to get that goal difference.
Yeah.
So,
To be fair, that was against them.
Was it?
Yeah. Our loss was against them.
True,
so,
actually, yeah, that's right. Eastern Suburbs just behind, 3 wins from 4, having lost this week. Hamilton Wanderers on the same number of points as Eastern Suburbs, also on 9.
That's great to see.
Yeah, that is awesome.
It's great
like,
football.
It's like Southern last year, where Southern got up, and this year Hamilton having been bottom cellar dwellers for a couple of years, coming all the way up, hopefully they can keep it up. Canterbury on 7, Waitaki on 6, Southern on 3, Hawke's Bay on 1, Tasman on 0, and the Wenix 0 points from 4 with a minus 10 goal difference already.
They were incredibly unlucky on the weekend to lose that game.
Against Canterbury?
Canterbury.
So it was 2 second-half goals, right?
2 second-half goals. It was it was pretty much the last kick of the half that Canterbury scored their second. So I was at the car getting my stuff out the back when they put it in. And then second half, Canterbury were the dominant team in that second half. You know, they created more. Ollie Sale played really, really well. He made some excellent saves. I think I can recall 3 or 4 one-on-one saves that he's made as
well. I saw some photos from you of those as well, I think.
He was exceptional. He was exceptional. He was genuinely unlucky to end up conceding 3. It wasn't a performance that deserved to end up conceding 3.
Mm.
And they scored late. I think it was like an 87th, 88th minute. You might remember, Dave. It was quite a late winner.
It was late.
Canterbury.
That's all I could tell you.
And they showed enough in there that they can compete with teams in the middle of that league with the team they have right now,
which is what
going to change.
They're always going to be.
So it was desperately unlucky. I felt for the kids. They didn't deserve it.
Anyway, I think that's all for this week. Unless anybody has anything pressing to add to the agenda,
A congratulations to Wendy Henderson on her short-term position of assistant to the football firm.
Actually, no, that's a good point. We should talk about the Hall of Ferns and camp this week. Who are they playing?
Well, and
they got Oceania Nations Cup.
That's all right. But Owen Prosser and Wendy Thompson's assistants for the Nations Cup. I think that's a temporary appointment for the time being,
just for the tournament. Wendy works at the council here as well, so.
Oh, cool.
I'm just taking some time off from there.
Awesome.
That's the only reason that it popped up in my mind, and then I saw it on Twitter confirmed. So it's great. She is, and no one in Wellington speaks poorly of Wendy Henderson. Everyone has positive words to say about her coaching, the way she mentors people in the both men's and mainly in the women's game as well. So it's good to see that good people getting the opportunities like this.
Yeah, and you reminded me that the under 17 woman had a 1-0 win over Finland?
Correct. Yep.
There we go.
What a goal.
Such a good goal,
what
right?
What a goal.
Yeah.
That could grace any ground. That was a beautiful strike. Keeper's done brilliantly to get a hand to it and still can't push it past the post.
It's quite similar to the one Bruno scores against us.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Yeah.
They're very, very similar
that
goals.
Looping over the top. Looks like it's taken a deflection but hasn't type thing. So, congratulations to them. Hopefully they can kick on and qualify out of their group.
One more point in the next game should push them
through. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. Because I think they've got Ghana last. Ghana should finish atop of the league. I think they definitely a very strong side. But I don't know who they're playing next, but a point out of that should see them through.
Yeah, and good luck to them because picking up points at a World Cup is not to be sniffed at.
So, yeah, absolutely.
At all.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with a preview of the next daily round having no
and a special guest.
And a special guest.
Yeah, but don't count the chickens. They've fallen through before, but he'll probably come through. So,
this is one special guest I think will probably
come through. I reckon chances of the guest being here probably higher than whether or not you're here.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see.
I've already offered to give him a lift, so he'd be here.
Yeah. You guys can handle that one without me. Anyway, that's us for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Hopefully Frosty's wife makes it back safely. No, not wife.
Not married.
I always say that. Not wife. Anyway.
It's fair enough. They've been together 10 years.
It's a fair assumption. Yeah. Anyway, hopefully everything goes well for everybody in the world and you'll have a happy week. Thanks everyone for listening. Bye.
You've forgotten how to do outros. It's phenomenal.
I just screwed that bit up. I was like, oh, it's not wife. That's just thrown me completely.
You threw yourself. That's hilarious. Yeah.
Labeling other people's relationships brings you.
Paper, rock, scissors in the VAR booth brings you.
More shit football to talk about brings you. Not scoring a goal from open play at all, really, this season
for
brings
360
you.
Minutes.
Yes.
360 minutes goalless brings you.
International breaks bring you.